Hello, and welcome to Soul-Led Living, a podcast dedicated to helping you live your soul's true path so you can create the dream life you know you are meant to live. I'm Nikki Novo, your spiritual mentor, a fiery Latina, mom of three, and an advocate for living soul-led. You're here because you're meant to be here, so let's do this. Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode here with me. We're going to do something a little different today. I am actually going to share the first chapter of my latest book, Soul-Led Living. We just turned it into an audiobook. Only took about almost 2 years. I was just so reluctant about doing it. I mean, I love audiobooks, and obviously I know most people listen, but it was just so hard to like birth that book and write that book that I just like didn't have the energy to do the audio version. I just don't think I was ready for it. And my husband just kind of kept pushing me, and he's like, you need to do the audiobook. So I started recording it probably about a year ago, and it's such an interesting book because I wrote this book to really help myself and others to remember to stay on your soul's true path. That's what I've been doing for the last 10 years, right? Reading people's souls and seeing if they're on path, if they're off path, and you know, what does that mean? And I think like overall being on path just means living your truth, right? Like living into those dreams, like aligning your life so that it feels like a true expression of you, like it's authentic to you. And this book was really inspired by my experience of just kind of waking up one day and looking around and being like, I don't really like this reality, you know? Like I wasn't doing work that I loved. My husband was working like a crazy person. I was drowning in raising these kids. And I really thought to myself, like, how can I change this reality? Like, this is not really working for me. And I think overall, that's just this feeling of the soul being like, hey, we're like not on the right path. And, you know, I decided to change my life, make some changes, shift, and move into my soul's true path, which is more of the life that I'm living today. But as I started to write that book, I was like, you know what? It's so funny is that I've been doing this my whole life. Like, I think I have these series of like falling off path and getting back on a path. I don't know if that is going to be forever and ever, but it does feel like, you know, you get on path and like you forget about living true to who you are. And then before you know it, you've gone a little too off path and you got to get back on. And it's very much a lifestyle. And I think that that is the lifestyle of living true to your soul. That's the whole theme around the podcast. And, you know, I'm always trying to encourage you guys to listen to yourself, to hear yourself, to follow what you hear. And that's what this book is truly about. It gives a bunch of tools. There's a bunch of storytelling, some of my stories, some of my clients' stories, things that I've learned along the way, teaching you how to trust yourself, how to listen to yourself, how to follow your heart and be brave, right? Like to really do that. So I wanted to share with you my first chapter because I love you guys and I, you know, you're used to hearing my voice. So I just want to see what you think and see if you enjoy it. It is chapter one. The rest of the book is available on Amazon on Audible. So hopefully you love it so much that you must get to the second chapter and you'll have to purchase that. And if you love it, guys, and you do have a copy of the book or you do have a copy of the audio, I'm almost at 100 reviews on Amazon. I think we're like at 91. So if you have time and would leave me a review, that would be amazing. I would love that. I would appreciate it. And share it with a friend. That's the greatest compliment, that you're like, wow, this is so life-changing. I want to share it with a friend. It is truly life-changing. And that's why it took me so long to read the book, because I would read the book and then read one chapter and be like, damn. My energy would just start shifting and I'd be like, damn, I have to like now get like more in alignment. Like it was so gentle the way that it was done, but I would need to take these like pauses so that my life could then catch up and be ready for the next chapter. It was very interesting. And I hope it does the same for you. I don't expect you, some people read it in 2 days, I've heard. But if it takes you time, I think it's because like your life is moving into that vibration that this book holds, which is truly the vibration of alignment, of authentic expression, like really living a life that feels true to you, that you're like, I designed this life. And sometimes that takes time. So that's why sometimes the book might be kind of potent and you need to take a break and then, you know, pick it up over and over again. Enjoy it. I hope it blesses you. I know it will. Thank you for listening and let me know what you think. Chapter 1, Remembering Your Soul. I came home to a nearly empty house. Small reminders of our family's memories scattered throughout. The glider from Ethan's baby nursery, the chair where I had nursed both our boys and created lullabies with my voice, stood by the front door, lifeless. The Swarovski crystal champagne flutes my mother had gifted us for our wedding day, forgotten on the kitchen counter, sat next to a crumbled bag of fast food left behind from the mover's lunch. "Nikki, we have to leave today," my husband Benny said as he kissed me on the cheek and rolled my luggage into our very bare house. "Tonight?" I asked, still shocked by everything that he and the movers were able to pack while I was gone. "Our beds are in the truck, the kids are ready, and the animals are packed. We're leaving tonight," he said sternly. 5 months earlier, Benny and I had taken a weekend trip to Western North Carolina, curious to see if it was finally time to move our family to the country. My parents stayed with our three kids in Miami, Florida, while we searched for land amongst the Blue Ridge Mountains. For 5 years, we had been dreaming of owning farmland and a place for our family to roam, grow our own food, and experience nature. We always imagined it as a vacation home, but in 2020, Benny's health was taking a turn for the worse, and our entire family structure needed to change. By 2021, we knew it was time to make the move. Despite discussing our plans with friends and family, no one believed us. Even our realtor in North Carolina, a childhood friend of Benny's who was originally from Miami, didn't believe us. She thought she was stuck driving a city couple around for the weekend, a couple who was simply dreaming of moving but would never really pull the trigger. In their defense, Miami kids rarely leave Miami, especially when you're born to Cuban exiles. When our families left Cuba, they rooted in Miami, claiming it as their new land. As a community, there was a desire to rebuild what was lost. The exiles hoped that keeping their descendants in one place would erase the past, placing a tremendous burden on children like Benny and me. The more I travel and meet people from around the world, the more I realize that this pressure is not unique to me or children of Cuban exiles. We are all connected to our land, especially after many generations of settling. There is an expectation to stay and make it work at all cost, even if staying is to the detriment of your mind, body, and soul. But what happens when new land calls us and our families? Will we be brave enough to follow? Benny and I drove the surrounding areas of Asheville for 3 days, searching for land the way one might search for a lover on dating apps, a lover they don't know yet, but one they know exists in their heart. We drove 8 hours each day and discovered all sorts of land. We found high-up land, steep land, no-cell-service land, breathtaking and expensive land, and everything in between, but still not our land. We did not know exactly what we were looking for. Raised in Miami, Florida, all we knew were 1 acre or less plots of land placed on a straight grid. In Western North Carolina, the neighborhoods looked disorganized to me. My eye was conditioned to look for manicured lawns, houses on a straight grid, elaborate landscaping, and gates and hedges to protect your property. Where I came from, everything was tamed, polished, and groomed. Everything appeared perfect. Here, everything was wild. The day before we were scheduled to fly back to Miami, our realtor led us to one last property. It was February. The trees were bare, the ground brown, and the air cold, but the sky was incredibly blue. We drove down a windy road into a neighborhood filled with homes where not one single aesthetic fit the other. They were all cousins that seemed completely unrelated. There was no rhyme or reason, and I was starting to get dizzy. "I have a good feeling about this one," Benny said as he continued to drive. My heart sank. I was scared because I recognized this feeling in my body. It was the same feeling I'd felt the first day I walked into Benny's home on one of our early dates. "I'm going to live here. I'm going to marry this man," I had said to myself. "Just because you are brave doesn't mean you are unafraid when you know that life is about to change." We parked our car at the foot of the property and took a good look. It had everything we were dreaming of. Flat land with a creek, a barn, and even hiking trails. Although covered in vines and overgrown foliage, Benny and I began to hike the land. A few weeks earlier, while in meditation, I had asked for guidance. I wanted to know how we would know when we had found the right land. What I heard was, "Follow the white wolf." As we continued on our hike, a large white wolf-looking dog appeared. A dog we now affectionately know as Emily, our neighbor's dog, guided us up the mountain and to the first lookout point on the property. It was absolutely breathtaking. Benny's mind was already racing, imagining where the house would go and where he would build a fort for the boys, where the animals could live, and where I would hike in the mornings. I asked him to slow down and reminded him that we needed the permission from the land first. I crouched down to the dirt while Benny placed his hand on a tree. "We would like to be stewards of this land. Is that okay with you?" we asked. A gust of wind came rushing through the forest, using the trees as rattles to signal their approval. It felt like a celebration led by giants, and we were their guest. I looked up to find the bluest sky I had ever seen and was taken aback by the sight of the big, bright moon in midday. "Benny, her name is Luna," I said. We made our way down the 30 acres of land and back to our realtor. We told her we really liked the land, but we needed the evening to think and meditate on it. The next morning, it was still dark out, yet Benny was already awake. "Nikki, I think we need to go see that land one more time before we go," he said to me. We knew we'd be cutting it a little close to get to the airport on time, but we both really wanted to go back. Without enough time to get permission from the realtors, we decided to head out on our own and risk trespassing. We had been walking around for about 10 minutes before an old farm truck pulled up to the property, and out of the truck came the closest thing I've ever seen to a rancher. "Can I help you?" the older gentleman yelled out to us in a thick southern drawl. "Benny, this man is going to shoot us," I whispered in a panic. It turned out that the rancher was the owner of the land, and we were, in fact, trespassing on his property. As Benny walked towards him to chat, the owner signaled to his wife in the truck to come speak to me. Benny introduced himself and shared his intentions for the land as if he was asking my father's permission to take my hand in marriage all over again. I spoke to his wife about our kids and how we were so excited to give him a life here, grow gardens, and fill the barn with animals. Our conversations were coming to an end, and all four of us were standing together when the man looked at Benny and said, "We received an offer for the land earlier today, but we want you and your family to have it instead. Put an offer today for the full amount. Don't insult me." "Yes, sir," Benny replied. "And son, you have the money, right? We don't play games around here," the man said. "Yes, sir, I'll give it to you in cash," Benny responded. The owner told us he was looking forward to our offer and followed it up with a good old-fashioned southern handshake. We called our realtor, put in the offer, and drove off to the airport. Just before the flight attendants told us to turn off our phones as we boarded the plane, she called us back to tell us that our offer had been accepted. We could hardly believe it. I plopped down into the airport seat, looked at Benny, and said, "You know we don't have the money, right? And you offered the guy cash." He laughed as he stored our luggage in the overhead compartment and said, "Nikki, when have we ever let money get in our way?" We found the land in February of 2021, but didn't close on it until May. Those 3 months were a roller coaster. During that time, we refinanced our Miami home and took out the cash we needed to buy the land. So this is what rich people do to buy vacation homes, I thought. This was a great hack. It got us what we needed to buy the land, but it still wasn't enough. Our land did not come with a house, so we knew we needed to sell our current house at a particular price to cover both the land and construction costs of the new house. We were completely functioning off of faith. We hustled, followed our intuition, and worked our schemes, but ultimately, we knew that we were not in control. Despite not having sold our Miami house yet or having a home to rent in North Carolina, we decided we would move in August in time for our three kids to start school. Miraculously, 2 weeks before our scheduled move date, a house became available for us to rent, and we received an offer on our Miami home at just the right price we needed. We took this as a sign that moving was our true calling. Despite knowing that we were doing the right thing, this time was not without stress. School start dates and availability of the rental home made for a very tight schedule for us. Our teenage daughter, Allie, who had joined the cheer squad at her new high school, needed to be in Asheville earlier than our move date to attend cheerleading camps. So I flew with her to Asheville, dropped her off at camp, and flew back down to Miami to drive with the rest of our family for the full move up. Expecting to have a few days to pack my final things, I arrived at our Miami home to find that there was nothing else to pack. Benny had taken it upon himself to hire help in order to give us that final push we needed to make the move. Knowing me too well, he knew that I was too nostalgic when I packed and that if he left me to it, I would be packing boxes for another 3 months. Our two boys ran to meet me at the door. "Mom, we're ready for our adventure," they squealed. Over the last 6 months, we had been visiting the land and had positioned our move to the kids as an adventure that our family was about to embark on together. After all, we were moving them away from everything they knew, their friends and extended family. But Benny and I were so ready to leave Miami, and we were very excited for our new life. Our energy must have been contagious because our children seemed equally as enthusiastic. Benny was set to drive the largest moving truck we could rent with a small trailer attached to it, which housed his tools. I was assigned the task of driving our family SUV with our two boys and our dog. Attached to my SUV was a small animal trailer with Luna Farms and a happy face spray painted on it by Benny, loaded with our farm animals. We lived on a rare agriculturally zoned street in Miami that allowed us to have small farm animals. So we were traveling with three goats, a pig, a bunch of rabbits, and several chickens. Looking back, I realized that somehow I got the short end of the stick driving all our humans and animals while Benny just drove our stuff. I grabbed a few final items scattered throughout the house that hadn't made their way into boxes and began throwing them into the car. Although I had spent the last 2 weeks saying goodbye to friends and family, I still somehow felt like I was escaping, running away, and lying. My best friend showed up to give me one last hug as friends who lived in the same city. My eyes filled with tears as she left, knowing how much love I was leaving behind. "Why can't I just be happy here like everyone else?" I secretly thought. As she left in her minivan, my father arrived at our house. Saying goodbye to our loved ones was hard, but saying goodbye to my father felt like a mix of betrayal and survival. My soul was going to die if I stayed, but my heart broke as I left. He looked at me and said, "This is going to be very hard, but I know it's going to be a good thing for our whole family." I was the last of my siblings living near our aging parents, and us leaving meant they would eventually want to move closer to one of their children. I was not only rocking our foundation, but I was rocking theirs too. He asked me not to drive at night. I lied and told him we would leave in the morning, already knowing that Benny wanted to hit the road right away. My father gave his grandsons a kiss on their foreheads and left. Just as the sun began to set, Benny and I started the cars and we slowly drove our loaded vehicles out of the white iron gate of our Miami home. My car's Bluetooth synced to my phone and Tom Petty's Free Falling began to play. Our oldest son, 8 at the time, rolled the window down in the back seat, stuck his head out and yelled, "Freedom!" Our 3-year-old quickly followed suit. They recognized the song but didn't know the lyrics, so instead they sang, "Freedom! We're free!" Attempting to keep up with Tom Petty, they continued their song of freedom as we caravaned out from all that we knew and into the unknown. The Trailblazer. The boys were right. We were all seeking to be free. The same way my grandparents and parents fled communist Cuba for the freedom of the United States, here we were again, seeking the same thing. But a country alone cannot give you freedom. The true freedom we seek is from the molds, the blueprints, and the templates we are told to follow. Whether someone told us to follow them or we subconsciously understood this to be the only way, we have been stuck on paths that are not really ours. They may be good for some people, but that does not mean they are meant for all of us. Sometimes that's the hardest part, when you look around and realize that your friends and family seem just fine living what you consider to be a mediocre and, quite frankly, boring life. You know there is more for you, but you don't exactly know what that means, and you don't know how to get there. All these feelings can mean only one thing. You are a trailblazer. You are not meant to follow the paths paved before you. To follow these paths would mean your truth would have to be hidden, your heart in hibernation mode, and your intuition ignored. I too am a trailblazer, and know that although we seek freedom for the molds, we also long to feel confident in our decisions. The hope is to make choices that are true for us, but to also feel good when making them, which is why the trailblazer must identify her own compass. As trailblazers, we must first understand that the reason we feel so different from the pack is because we somehow have managed to remember our soul's tone. While many of those around us seem to follow the beat of a drum played outside of them, we faintly hear a calling that comes from within. Most likely, you call this tone your heart, your inner voice, or maybe your gut. But what it most wants to be known as is your soul. As humans, we are souls that exist in a vehicle known as the body, which is driven by the mind. This is the Trinity, the mind, body, and soul. The mind and body are new, while the soul is old. And with old age comes wisdom. The soul is the wisest part of us. It knows more than our human minds can comprehend. However, despite all this hidden wisdom, we are here to experience human life. This means our memory of the soul and what it's been up to for many lifetimes is limited. But although it's limited, it does not mean we do not have access to it. Our soul is always making regular contact with our human self. Contact is made through a moment of presence where we are unbound from our judgments, our biases, and our closed-minded logic. There are several ways the soul can get through to us, but I have found that the most effective syncing happens when we are connected to our intuition, activating our bravery, following our curiosity, leaning into self-trust, and betting on ourselves. Let's look at each of those so we can better understand the moments when our soul comes online. Intuition. Your intuition is the voice of your soul. Depending on how you receive your intuition, you may describe this random experience in various ways. My gut tells me to go this way. I can't help but listen to my heart. I just know there is something not right about this. This feels off. I heard a voice within me telling me which way to go. I wish there was more scientific research dedicated to intuition so we can better understand it and therefore describe it. But what's more important for now is that you learn to understand your own. We may not be able to study intuition as a whole right now, but we can study our own. When we are feeling lost, unsure of our next move, or in the middle of a transition, we tend to look outside of ourselves for answers. Despite years of intuition training, I have often found myself doing the same. In fact, this habit is actually one of the reasons I started performing intuitive readings on others. Before my business became focused on intuition and the soul, I was a writer with a blog, desperately trying to figure out how to monetize my spiritual hobby. I wasn't a fashion blogger, I wasn't a life coach, and I wasn't an expert in anything. I felt like I didn't know who I was or what I had to offer the world, but at the same time, I knew I was meant to do this work. This confusing calling was driving me crazy. So over the course of 2 years, I visited dozens of psychics and hired several business consultants to tell me who I was and what I should do. My all-time favorite memory of this time was when I had two brand consultants present an entire PowerPoint slideshow to me on who I was. All of this outside information just made me more confused. So I went to visit yet another psychic. As we sat in her tiny purple room as she began sharing her intuitive information, every single thing she told me, it seemed like I already knew. That's not to say she wasn't accurate. There just wasn't any new information to give me. I had all the answers within me. On that day, I told myself I wouldn't visit another psychic for at least 2 years. Still to this day, the only readings I have received are from my students, and that's because I love to experience their talent and, well, because they are the best in the industry. Even when I'm lost, I do my best to go within because there is no better place to look for answers. Any outside guidance I bring into my life, I see as a collaboration rather than a replacement for my own intuition. Throughout this book, I will teach you several ways to access your intuition. We'll even go into how to read energy. But for now, I want you to try catching yourself when you seek answers outside of you. Notice the habit. When you see yourself about to reach out beyond you, schedule some alone time with yourself. Go for a walk or write in a journal and remind yourself that the answers are within you. Without detoxing from the constant need to receive outside opinions and guidance, we'll never get to understand our intuition and how it works. It's like the soul is calling us on a phone. The phone is ringing, but we don't answer it because we don't recognize the sound. Give yourself space so you can learn to decipher the ring. In chapter 2 and chapter 9, I give more details on how you can develop your intuition, but the first step is to respect your own. You have your own compass, and it will always be more accurate than anyone else's. Not because they are faulty, but because they do not have your compass. Bravery. The next sign that our soul is trying to come online is bravery. This is probably my favorite way to connect with my soul, mainly because it is active. Intuition is about receiving information, and bravery is about acting upon that information. When you use this tool, you are always rewarded. You may not be rewarded in the way you hope for, but nonetheless, your life changes when you act with bravery. One act will give you a change in the norm, but several acts, back to back, can create the kind of life people dream of. This is why I believe that bravery is a personality trait that you must commit to. Anytime you find yourself afraid to make a move, you'll remember that you are a brave person. And brave people take action even when they are afraid. The reason bravery is a portal into the soul is because it creates focused energy. When you are acting bravely, you decide to block out any distracting factors. You're in the zone, which means that you have managed to connect to the energy source of love. This is what we refer to as God, and what I will refer to in this book as the divine. Bravery offers us a focus because we understand that what we're about to do is a must. Think about the energy of something you must do versus the energy of something you maybe will do. Must is tight and it's lean. There are no other options. Maybe is like the guy who is dating someone great, but insists on continuing to play the field. He can't commit because he is entertaining distractions. Therefore, his future is in limbo. The soul is synonymous with truth. It is our true essence. When we use bravery, we know our truth. We respect it, so we follow it. The reason we often can't act with bravery is because we have become distracted from our truth. If bravery is focus, fear is distraction. When we are in fear or doubt, we are distracted by all the maybes and the opinions of others. We can't actively move toward our intuition hits because we are stopping to hear the outside noise. If we are not using our own intuition to receive guidance, but instead we are trying to use someone else's, we will not be able to activate the magic of bravery. Bravery will only follow our truth, our essence, and our soul. It knows not to trust anything or anyone else. curiosity. Often, between your intuitive hit and brave action is curiosity. When my husband and I decided to visit North Carolina in search for land, we were curious. We had a faint feeling that we were meant to move, but we needed to investigate that feeling first. Instead of curiosity, we could have right away given into fear, worrying about what others would have thought and scared that our children wouldn't thrive. If that were the case, we would have never visited. And the more we refused to listen, the faint feeling would have become muffled. Curiosity does not know the answer, but it's willing to find out. The reason curiosity works so well, especially in times when we don't have a concrete answer, is because it does not believe either side just yet. While it may not believe its intuition yet, it also does not believe the fear. All curiosity wants is space to explore. When teaching students how to connect with their intuition, I always ask them to use curiosity to receive intuitive information. What blocks us from our intuition and therefore our soul is our logical, judgmental mind. When information tries to come through us, the messages are filtered by our mind. In order to keep us safe, our mind tries to place the downloads into categories. While it tries to keep us safe, the result is that we remain closed-minded and therefore our life remains small. We start to receive guidance from our biased mind rather than our intuition. If we can bypass the logical mind by being curious, we're much more likely to discover something new. We can start to break free from the patterns that hold us back from living soul-led. Curiosity is how we can get access to truth instead of old patterns. Once we get that truth and believe in it, it's easier to be brave. But bravery may need one more piece of evidence before fully committing. This evidence is self-trust. Self-trust. Self-trust is the safety of knowing that when we leap or make a big move, that we will be there to catch ourselves. It's safety at its core. When I moved our family to North Carolina, I could not be sure that it was the right choice. My intuition guided me, but it would never give me guarantees. If the move had proven to be a horrible mistake, my ability to trust myself would have stepped in saying, "Okay, so this is different than we thought. We're not going to blame ourselves. We're proud of ourselves for taking the risk. And now let's explore why this feels wrong and what we need to do to feel okay." The small part of us, the part that is often unsure and scared, wants to know that if it does make a brave move, that the big part of us won't abandon it. Another way to look at this is that our inner child does not want to be scolded by our inner mother if the brave move turned out differently than expected. To make brave moves, we need to know that we have our own back, no matter the outcome. When my daughter Allie entered middle school, she struggled with girlfriend relationships. Being that she was my first child, I did not understand that this struggle was quite normal. Instead, I assumed something was wrong with her. When the other mothers would call me to discuss the situation between their child and mine, my initial instinct was to trust the mom and believe in what she was saying. After all, she was an adult. She must know better, right? Well, it took me about 3 tries to realize that maybe instead of trusting them, I should trust my own daughter and what she had to say about the situation. Those first few times that she struggled with friends, I abandoned her by blaming her for a less than perfect outcome. I did not have her back. I trusted others before I trusted her. Eventually, though, I caught this pattern, I corrected it, and I asked her for forgiveness. To feel brave enough to make moves, she needed to know that I would have her back no matter what. If not, she would have learned to play it safe. This is a story of trust outside of myself, but this is the best way to show you how we often abandon ourselves. If our inner child cannot trust that we will be there after a leap of faith, especially one that works out differently than we hoped for, it will not allow us to jump. Bravery cannot exist in this environment. Self-trust is a stable reaction to the unknown, the unplanned, and the uncharted. Stable means that something is there to catch us when we leap, we are there for ourselves. Like me, you have probably abandoned yourself many times. Even as I write this book, I'm afraid that if I receive criticism for who I am, I will believe the person criticizing me over myself. This has happened before. I grew up in a very critical environment as a child, and I always believed in others before myself. Eventually, I learned to block out the noise. In fact, in the next chapter, I'm going to tell you about the time I called off a wedding just 2 months before I was scheduled to walk down the aisle. This was the first time I actually trusted myself over others. The pain of trusting others became so intense that the only way out was to trust myself. I was in my 20s then, and I wish I could tell you that I have never abandoned myself again, but that wouldn't be true. Every once in a while, my unconscious patterns kick in and I don't realize I have left my inner child on her own. I tend to do this when I believe the people who criticize me or when I believe that someone outside of me has the answer to my life's challenges. If self-trust is the opposite of self-abandonment, then simply put, self-trust is about being there for ourselves, no matter what. Being there for ourselves sends the message that we are worth trusting. This makes us willing to follow ourselves into the unknown because we know the leader and we know she would never leave us behind. We can now be brave because we have a leader we can count on. She may not know the way, but she always figures it out. When developing self-trust, it's important to look back with compassion and forgiveness at the times we let ourselves down. I let my daughter down often during those early teenage years, but she gracefully extended me forgiveness. She gave me a second chance at being a better leader for her. Just as my daughter forgave me, a soul-led life cannot be achieved without self-forgiveness. If we refuse to forgive, we will continue to use the ego to fix ourselves rather than using the soul. Forgiveness is love, and love is the energy of our soul. We deserve love no matter how many times we have abandoned ourselves. The reason we abandoned ourselves in the first place is because we became disconnected from our truth and instead allowed ourselves to be guided by our programming. We will learn more about programming in Chapter 4. Betting on yourself. After we have learned to access our intuition, activate bravery, utilize curiosity, and develop self-trust, we are then ready to bet on ourselves. Betting on ourselves creates soul alignment. If we think of bravery as sprinting through fear, betting on ourselves would be having the stamina to run a full marathon. When we bet on ourselves, we enter into a long-term commitment with our intuitive guidance. We've learned to hold focus for a longer period of time than just receiving one intuitive hit and taking action on that. Betting on yourself requires a constant cycling of intuition, bravery, curiosity, and self-trust. As you cycle these qualities, fear and self-doubt are less likely to take a hold. When fear takes over, we fall off our soul's true path and end up on the default path. We'll talk more about this in Chapter 3. Betting on yourself also requires a bit of history. When you're faced with a leap of faith, you'll want to look back at all the times you jumped and succeeded. This is a great time to make a list of all your past unrealistic accomplishments. We all have them. Maybe you survived a traumatic childhood, landed a job when there were hundreds of applicants, ran an actual marathon, left a toxic relationship, finished a challenging degree or certification, raised tiny humans, and so on. Whatever it is that you accomplished, write it down in a notebook for you to see. Who needs fancy diplomas on a wall when you have your fancy list of unrealistic accomplishments? A soul's true path is filled with leaps of faith. Moving my family from everything we knew was a leap of faith that landed all of us in deeper soul alignment. I didn't walk here. I leaped here. And we can only leap when we believe we are a solid bet. Betting on ourselves also involves our worthiness. To feel fully worthy can be a difficult and long-term concept. To bet on ourselves, we may not fully, truly believe that we are worthy. We just need to see that we deserve a chance to try, a chance to throw our hat in the ring. Why not us? You have a gift, a talent, a calling, a desire within you. It is not there by accident. You deserve to follow it. You deserve to bet on yourself.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. I love you guys so much. If you have a sec, I would so appreciate it if you would leave me a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Those reviews are so helpful. And if you're ready to start living your soul-led life, pick up my latest book, Soul-Led Living, available on Amazon. Until next time, love you much.